Hi, my name is Barry Manandi, and you're listening to the ZFM Sport Podcast.
It's Messi! It is the cleanest of clean finishes from the best on the planet.
It's time for the biggest sports stories.
Chelsea, the UEFA Champions League winners of 2021.
The biggest interviews.
That such a great spectacle is ruined by such thuggish behaviour.
And all the analysis right here.
He's the one player that has the arrogance to think that he can play in any stadium in the world and any pitch in the world in front of any player in the world and take them on.
Every weekday, it's my sport, it's your sport. It's ZFM Sport. Let's join the team for the biggest show in the world of sport on ZFM Stereo. My station, your station.
On the weekend when the greatest show on earth began, that is of course the 2022 FIFA World Cup Qatar 2022 official name. Also, there was a lot of sport that took place, and today we're going to pick the meat off the bones of the weekend that was local and international. The team is in the studio, Mike Madud, Chris Meadzi. We've got Alois Bunjira and Sean Tafininika, our producer. My name is Barry Manandi. On the home front today, Ulayo Chiefs goalkeepers coach Nkosiyazi Nqube expressed delight with his team's performance following Chiefs' historic triumph as they clinched the Chibuku Super Cup trophy after beating Herentals in a fast-paced final at Barberfield Stadium yesterday. In international sports news, New Zealand rugby coach Ian Foster says the team felt flat after allowing England to grab a last gasp draw on Saturday in a game the All Blacks dominated for 70 minutes. In around the world in 60, we have updates from Italy, Australia and the United Arab Emirates.
And the second half of the show is the Castle Lager World Football Report, and it was camels, fireworks and acting legend Morgan Freeman as the World Cup kicked off last night with a visually striking opening ceremony ahead of the tournament's first match, where Qatar became the first host nation in history to lose an opening match following the 2-0 loss to Ecuador. England hammered Iran 6-2 in an emphatic World Cup opener thanks to two goals from Bukayo Saka and strikes from Jude Bellingham and Raheem Sterling before substitutes Marcus Rashford and Jack Grealish rounded off the rout in the match that was played this afternoon. And the two favourites to progress from Group A, Senegal and Netherlands, have just kicked off their game at the Al Tumama Stadium.
Hi, I'm JC Creel, Springbok and Blue Bulls backline player. You are listening to ZFM Sports.
Sure, so much to comment on. Let us know your thoughts. 0731-168-045. Lawyer Chiefs, let's talk about them. We can talk about England, a rout against Iran. Your thoughts on that. Whatever you want to talk about, the platform is there for you. It is WhatsApp 0731-168-045. We're talking about the Chibuku Super Cup in a moment or two. But first, a local sports news roundup. Chris is back.
The home front. Local sports news and analysis.
Started with some rugby news, where Zimbabwe missed out on an opportunity to claim their first Zambezi Challenge title after succumbing to a narrow 19-17 loss against Germany in an absorbing final at Harare Sports Club yesterday. Despite a courageous fight back in the second half, which saw them score two tries before co-captain Godfrey Magaramombe failed to score a last gasp winning try, the Cheetahs were outplayed by Germany, who deservedly won the competition. Head over to some netball news. Zimbabwe's national netball team left the country yesterday for the 2022 Diamond Challenge in South Africa, with coach Lopafadzo Mtsaoki challenging the netball team to deliver. The Gems will take on South Africa, Scotland and President's 12 at the tournament, which begins tomorrow at the University of Pretoria. And in cricket news, Zimbabwe all-rounder Sikander Raza expressed his delight after joining Rangpo Riders for the 2023 edition of the Bangladesh Premier League. The veteran is among five foreign cricketers signed by Riders for the upcoming edition of the T20 tournament. The official Facebook page of Rangpo Riders uploaded a video where Raza showed his joy after being picked by the Riders. Mike just deserves for his exploits at the World Cup.
Yeah, I think he's become a regular in that particular tournament, so it would have been something of a surprise if he actually hadn't been selected.
From Rufaro to Barberfield, Mandava to Nyamunga, all the perfect moments in the Castle Lager Premier Soccer League come together on ZFM Sport.
Season's over, and the last bit of business on the green grass that needed to be taken care of was, of course, the cup final, the Chibuku Super Cup final, which took place yesterday. And Bulawayo Chiefs goalkeepers coach Nkosiyazi Ncube expressed delight with his team's performance following Chiefs' historic triumph as they clinched the Chibuku Super Cup trophy after beating Herentals 1-0 in a fast-paced final at Barberfield Stadium yesterday. A good crowd, estimated at over 10,000 people, came to witness the final, and Arthur Musiwa scored the all-important goal 7 minutes before half-time break. We caught up with Bulawayo-based football pundit Muziwetu Hadebe, and we asked him about the significance of Bulawayo Chiefs' Chibuku Super Cup triumph.
It's a great achievement for Bulawayo Chiefs, for a team that came into the PSL in 2018. I think they did well to win the Chibuku Super Cup, and I think it's something that will inspire them to push on and fight even for more glory. They have looked ambitious, spending a lot, and they would want to continue with that, but you'll appreciate that in the second half of the season it hasn't been easy in terms of their spending. The funds have not been flowing as they would have wanted, so this is a big conversation for them to lift the Chibuku Super Cup, and it will inspire them, I'm sure, to try and reach even greater heights. But quite interesting as well, they lift the Chibuku Super Cup after their foreign coach left the club due to his work permit expiring, and for Thulani Tutsinqube, who also beat Highlanders while he was in charge in the quarterfinals, and then also knocked out Rhinos in the semifinals. He has achieved a lot, and this was a big statement to say that give me this this job, and we'll wait and see if Chiefs will give him the job. He has been with Chiefs for quite some time, even from the lower leagues, but I think it was also a statement for him to show the football family what he can achieve.
Thulani Toots Sibanda, of course, championing the way for the Bulawayo Chiefs team to win that trophy, beating Highlanders in the semi-final, as Muzi said, and then ultimately winning the trophy outright for a club that has been having its financial struggles in the second half of the season, and $75,000 being the purse, or the winning purse, for this tournament will go down a nice treat for Bulawayo Chiefs, won't it, Alois?
Yeah, it's a good price. It's a good money, like you say, that financially the been problems, and it's always good, you know. Sometimes I think also as a footballer, it doesn't matter how much money is on stack or a stack, you just want to win anything,
yeah, you know, win title, you know, that's why you play the game, right?
Exactly. I think these Chiefs guys will wanted the title and money.
when you haven't been paid in 4 months,
yeah, exactly.
You want
that's
the money
what it
as
was.
Well.
That's what it was, 4 months, which is a long time to wait. But Chris, as a spectacle, the final was absolutely a breath of fresh air, I would say, on the Zimbabwean landscape, because we saw two teams that played open, expansive football. They both looked like they wanted to win it, and it was refreshing to see in an environment where we see teams not wanting to lose rather than going out and to try and win,
especially in a cup final. And this cup final meant so much to both of these sides. Herentals, who've made their own strides, Bulawayo Chiefs almost trying to get out of the shadow of their Twitter account, and so both of these teams had a lot to play for, and it's so great that they were able to put on this spectacle, because when these two teams reached the final, it's kind of like, okay, you know, it might be a bit of a drab affair, but the fact that they managed to put on a show, I think, is so important just in terms of what we can expect from the Premier League.
Yeah, the good crowd witnessed the game, no doubt the dollar price tag assisted Mike, and in truth it was a good strategy in terms of the organisers, but really their hands were tied on the basis of the billing of the cup final in terms of the names, like Chris is saying, but in truth, in terms of the action, it was well worth it.
Yeah, Barry, we could say their hands were tied, but you've got to give them credit for actually acknowledging that, you know what, we've got to do something to make sure that we have a bit of a spectacle. And right. I was listening to, I think, a news piece that Alois did for this station, I think earlier in the day, and I think, Alois, you were talking about the fact that players sometimes will raise their performance levels as a result of fans being in the stadium.
Yes.
That, you know, when
the
people when there are people there to cheer you, when there's an audience there. And we have seen that psychology even work with our children.
Yeah.
You know, you get that extra 50% from a child when you show up for his sports day.
Exactly.
And they're able to give their all. I remember this one story of my little niece. We had all thought, you know what, Tadi, she never liked long distance races, etc. And then one day, they were having a cross-country meet, and we just went there as an entire family to back her up. She came second.
Wow.
That's what happened. The adrenaline.
Because there was that adrenaline rush, and because there were people who were standing by the time, and we cheered her on, and she came second, and the teacher was in absolute dismay.
Yeah.
Because they were like, you know what, Tadi is the one person that we never thought.
The bookmakers are
always striving, always coming last. So that same, I think, a concept applies even to adults.
Yeah.
Even to elite athletes who are bound to perform better. And what we saw from Herentals and Bulawayo Chiefs is that, you know what, because there was a crowd there, they felt obliged to raise their game. There were also various members of the Zimbabwe football family.
Yes.
And a lot of these guys, we talk about Bulawayo Chiefs not having been paid for 4 months. There are a number of players there who might be thinking, you know what, this is the game that I need to make an impression so that I can move to greener pastures.
Yeah.
The Herentals players as well, they felt that, you know what, this was a winnable game. So credit to the two teams, credit to the organizers as well for realizing that, you know what, if we keep it to the norm of $5, $3, $10, $20 price tag, we're going to have 15 fans to back these teams. So strategy together with the team's desire and the raised output made this a spectacle worth watching and televising.
And televising as well. And just now to talk about the game in itself, Alois, you look at the two approaches of the teams. They both played with very fast transition, but it always looked like Bulawayo Chiefs had a measure of more control than Herentals did. Herentals, it was very hustle bustle, it was frenetic, but it always looked like Bulawayo Chiefs was in control, and chiefly because of Thokozi Simsebe in the midfield,
wonderful,
who was phenomenal, and then Perfect Chikwende, who in my view is probably one of the most underrated players in the country, because he was fantastic.
Yeah, Perfect Chikwende has always been a good player, to be honest. You know, even by the time he left FC Platinum, went to Tanzania, you know, he was actually doing well. But like you say, that I thought as well, Bulawayo Chiefs were more composed.
Yeah.
You know, when they have, they chilled a bit. But the Rentals, they wanted a lot. Wanted too much whenever. They had a lot of energy.
Yeah.
They were rushing things. Every time they get it, they wanted to have a go. They wanted to go. They wanted to have a go. But sometimes football is not playing like that.
Yeah.
You need to take a break. You need to breathe. Sometimes you need to regain your breath.
You need to make the right selections as well.
Exactly.
Selecting Innocent Menza to start that game the age of 50 was...
That for me was
never going to work.
It was a mistake.
It was a mistake. And the problem is, by the time they rectified that mistake at the break,
at half-time,
the horse had long since bolted and left the stable. I thought Tino Benza, who was coming from that soccer star selection, didn't do a lot to cover his name in glory, and then you also get Joao, who was, as we watched there, the Dutch. They've just fluffed a chance there. Through on goal, and some great defending from Sheikh Kouate, as the Dutch were bearing in on goal. It should have been an opening goal for them.
Yeah, Oranje taking on Senegal, as you can hear.
But getting back to Benza, I just thought, you know what? I thought it was
from Sheikh Kouate.
I thought it was more important for Herentals as a football club to realize that, you know, more than appeasing the ego of the owner, this was about getting silverware, your first bit of silverware as a football club.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Bulawayo Chiefs went out and did.
Yeah.
Made sure that, you know what, they silenced some of us. We've been calling them, you know what, social media giants.
Yeah.
They now have a trophy to show for all their efforts, to say, guys, we are a club that's progressing.
Yeah.
And our progress is not just on social media. It's not just off the field of play as far as merchandising and some of the things that they've been trying to do, commendably so, but also on the field of play. Yeah. We are beginning to win things. And you see, the experience of players like Elvis Moyo, I thought he was phenomenal. Madzongwe at the back as well. He brought a lot of calm and a lot of experience.
Yeah, the calmness,
back.
That control.
And that's what Herentals was lacking.
Yes.
I know Innocent Menza is 50, but he's never played these games.
He hasn't.
He's never played cup finals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that element that Mike has brought up of the selections. You look at the semi-final, both Benzas left out for the semi-final, and they go on and they prevail. Both Tino Benza and his dad, it's weird to say, innocent Benza, being left out of the semi-final. So yeah. You could see that they saw the value of having energy in the semi-final. Perhaps it could have been an idea to use in the final.
Yeah, but I think that the novelty of him playing in the final kind of overshadowed anything organizationally. Don't doubt that the recommendation or the decision was made, but look, when you're the club owner, and to some extent some of this is all about ego, it then overshadows, and I think it's a problem that's going to show up continuously for her rentals if it's not nipped in the bud now, because situations like this will always arise in the club. And what matters more, is it a particular individual who happens to own the club, or is it the organization?
Well, her rentals, for their efforts, they walk away with $50,000 as the losing finalist purse. As we said earlier, Blair Chiefs walks away $75,000 richer, quite some rich pickings for those two teams that did the nation proud almost in that cup final in the City of Kings yesterday. All right, we'll take a brief commercial break, then we're talking rugby.
From the front of the grid to the back of the net, it's ZFM Sport. International Sports News Roundup, where the world comes out to play.
A brief update from the Qatar. World Cup, the 2022 edition, of course, and it's Senegal taking on the Netherlands. It's currently 23 minutes played, and it's nil all. End-to-end stuff, Senegal giving as good as they're getting, but you've got to say that the Oranje of the Netherlands have the upper hand. Right, let's talk some rugby now. New Zealand rugby coach Ian Foster says the team felt flat after allowing England to grab a last gasp draw on Saturday in a game the All Blacks dominated for 70 minutes. Foster says he was surprised England did not press for the win, a sentiment echoed by swathes of home crowd who had booed Marcus Smith's call to settle for the draw.
It was a game of drama, and to come away with 25 all draws, probably something we're pretty disappointed with. I felt our first 70, we really played the sort of rugby that we want to get to. We were we had a great tour, and we were pretty determined to come to this game against a team that was very physical against us 3 years ago, and we struggled to control the game line against, and thought tonight we did that really, really well and put ourselves into a position that we should have been a little bit better. But credit to England, the way they came back, that card sort of galvanised them, and their performance in the last 10 is worthy of a lot of credit.
All right, so you've just got yourself back into the game. You've basically come back from the dead, did England do. It's hit 80 minutes, and then the hooter goes off and you opt to kick it out to end the game as a draw rather than try and press for the win. difference in mentality.
Yeah, difference in mentality, and it's not just an All Blacks thing. It's also something that's I think rubbed on to the other Southern Hemisphere sides. The Wallabies, the Springboks, the Pumas of Argentina as well. They have now taken it upon themselves that, you know what, as long as the ball is alive, we can still press for the win.
For the result,
as long as there's still a chance that that the game can be won, they're willing to take a few risks in order to win, and we didn't see that from England. And I'm just slightly disappointed in England on a number of levels. First of all, the fact that for 70 minutes, I mean, they were hopelessly outplayed, and I think New Zealand got a bit lax, started making a lot of errors. I think the New Zealand performance was error-strewn. That's what got England back into the game. And then, of course, that yellow card to Borden Barrett, which ensured that the All Blacks played the last 9 minutes a man down. That's what they took advantage of. And credit to them for at least being a side that's capable of taking advantage of opportunities like that and drawing the game. But when you take a look at what's happened over the last month, as far as these tours are concerned, I take a look at the European sides, and I'm seeing nothing there in what is quite easily New Zealand's worst season.
Yeah.
I'm seeing nothing there that poses a threat to an improving New Zealand side and how New Zealand will look in 10 months' time come the Rugby World Cup. I can't see it, to be honest.
Yeah.
The Irish are a decent side, yes, but I don't see the X factor. I'm looking at the Springboks still as the biggest threat to the All Blacks, as glory is concerned.
Yeah, certainly. I'd agree with that sentiment. I thought the Scots were plucky and brave,
yes.
but they don't look like they've got enough to, in an 80-minute game, get over the line, especially if it's knockout rugby.
Plucky and brave, but yeah. Again, with the Scots, if you bring back Whitelock, Retallick, and all those players to play Scotland, they get a hiding.
Yeah.
You know, it was only because of the changes and the players that they rested for the England game that allowed Scotland to take advantage and make a spectacle of it. So I think the Northern Hemisphere for me is competitive, but I doubt. Maybe France. On a day because they're hosting it.
Yeah, and it'll be on the back of possibly a performance that's very attritional, boring in inverted commas, that gets them over the line. Probably
France
even low
has got a great opportunity in this.
Yeah.
The opening game of the World Cup is France versus the All Blacks.
Yeah, there we go.
That game either is an opportunity for them to lay a marker and have a very confident tournament, or if they lose, then it becomes, you know, the doubts will just creep in
and
from day one.
Yeah, and change their mentality. All right, back to the game at Twickenham, England taking on the All Blacks. And Mike talks about an improving All Black side. One of the areas that I certainly noted of major improvement is the defence of the All Blacks, because there were times where England got into scoring positions and the defence was controlled, yes. It wasn't frantic or frenetic by the All Blacks, but it was solid.
And I think that's going to be one of the very key attributes of this team going forward. When we've seen them falter, I think it's been that wonky defense that's been problematic. In this particular game, we saw a very strong defense. So going forward, I'm hoping that those combinations will remain the way they are.
Yeah, certainly. So the All Blacks, certainly.
It's a bit of a conundrum, isn't it? Sam Kane is not there. The best player on the park was Dalton Papali'i.
His
replacement. What do you do? I mean, as far as fetching is concerned, which Richie McCaw sort of like became a household name for.
On the back of him.
He's a better fetcher than the team captain.
The team captain.
So, okay. I mean, that's one of the conundrums that the coaching staff at the All Blacks is going to be faced with.
Yeah.
And that, who do you pick?
But you're hired for brave decisions, aren't you? You've got to make a call.
But every time we've criticised Sam Kane, he's put in a man of the match performance.
He loves the criticism.
He still remains one of the best players. But I'm just thinking to myself that Papali'i, I think, just gives you something extra.
Yeah.
He's able to contribute offensively as well. And Senegal have had a really good stretch here. Nice 5 minutes for them where they put the Dutch under pressure.
Yeah. Camped in the Dutch half.
And I think this is the benefit, isn't it, Alois, of having so many players now who are playing in European leagues and playing for
top
teams.
Level.
So in terms of their technical ability and tactical awareness, they're just as good as these European nations.
Yeah, exactly, Mike. That's why I actually put my hand up and say Senegal, for me, they are the candidates from Africa, because they've got so many players playing in the top leagues in the world. They're not just the technical ability, they also have that confidence. You know, we play together, Shamai. We meet all the time with these guys.
So
I think it's a plus for Senegal. That's why you can actually see the way they are playing with so much confidence. They can actually go and pin the Netherlands. I like what I'm seeing from Senegal so far.
I like the look of them for sure. Let's wrap up our rugby with the rest of the weekend's Autumn Nations series results. South Africa too strong for Italy, 63-21. They caned them, and then Georgia getting a surprise victory over Wales, 13-12. They prevailed.
Brilliant results.
Fantastic results.
15 years ago, Georgia wouldn't have been able to live with Zim.
Not a chance, exactly. And look at how far they have come. Let's not talk about Zim whatsoever. Scotland 52-29 victors over Argentina, while Ireland prevailed over Australia 13-10. France 35-17 over Japan. Now, a quick update. Ireland flanker Josh van der Flair was named Men's Player of the Year at the World Rugby Awards. The New Zealand fly half Aruhe Demant won the Women's Player of the Year award deservedly after helping the hosts beat England in the World Cup final earlier this month.
Hi, this is Benjamin Locke. I'm on the Zimbabwe Davis Cup team, and you're listening to ZFN Sports.
Around the world in 60 seconds. International sports news.
We take off in Italy, where Novak Djokovic says there's no end zone for his career after becoming the oldest ATP Finals champion as he matched Roger Federer's record 6 wins at the season-ending tournament. Experience triumphed over youth as the 35-year-old easily dispatched 23-year-old Norwegian Casper Ruud 7-5-6-3 in Turin. Head over to Australia. Steve Smith made a high-class 94 as Australia beat England by 72 runs in the second one-day international to secure a series win with a game to spare. The former captain shared stands of 101 and 90 with Manus Labuschagne, and the host posted 280 for 8 before bowling out England for 208 runs in Sydney. Touchdown in the United Arab Emirates, where double Formula One champion Max Verstappen has reiterated that his current Red Bull contract could be his last, as he may retire age 31 due to the number of races he has and his desire to do other stuff. Verstappen won the final race of the season in Abu Dhabi as Ferrari's Charles Leclerc beat the Dutchman's teammate Sergio Perez to secure second in the championship. We're going to get into that proper on tomorrow's show. It's proudly brought to you by Zomoko.
Your hit music station. My station. Your station. It's everybody's station. ZFM Stereo. Barcelona Premier Soccer League, La Liga, Serie A, the English Premier League, the Bundesliga. It all comes together with the Castles on the Castellaga World Football Report. Jogo Bonito, Tiki Taka, Total Football. It's a football celebration where only the best are invited. Messi, Ronaldo, Neymar, Benzema. The stars come out to play on your Qatar 2022 World Cup update on ZFM Sport.
Right, the exponents of Total Football are in action. Orange, the Dutch, they are playing Senegal. The Lions of Teranga, 36 minutes played, and it remains goalless in that game, end to end. The Senegalese giving as good as they are getting, and some might even be tempted to say getting better off the action right now against the Dutch side that has got Memphis Depay, one of the all-time leading goal scorers on the bench. He'll be looking, of course, to come on and make an impact a bit later on. We'll be giving you another update when it hits half a time. But let's take a look at what happened yesterday, where it was camels, fireworks, and, of course, the acting legend that is Morgan Freeman, as the World Cup kicked off with a visually striking opening ceremony ahead of the tournament's first match, where Qatar became the first host nation in history to lose an opening match following the 2-0 reverse to Ecuador. American actor Freeman featured in the festivities alongside Qatari YouTuber Ghanim Al Mufta. Let's hear a clip from Morgan Freeman's speech during the opening ceremony.
This is all so new. All that I have known before was a land that seemed to be in turmoil, with families forgotten, and I stopped hearing your voice.
Come on over.
I'm not sure. Am I welcome?
We sent out the call because everyone is welcome. This is an invitation to the whole world.
I remember, even after hearing the call, instead of seeing another way, we dismissed it and demanded our own way. And now, the world feels even more distant and divided. How can so many countries, languages, and cultures come together if only one way is accepted?
So the ceremony kicking off with Oscar-winning actor Freeman narrating a video about football's ability to unite. If you throw in there South Korean pop star Jungkook, who of course sang Dreamers, the tournament song, alongside Qatari singer Fahad Al-Kubaisi at the stadium in Al-Khor. Chris, what do you make of the entire spectacle? First of all, just in isolation as an opening ceremony, then in comparison to previous World Cups.
Trust the Emirates to bring God to the opening ceremony. You know what? I think it was a little bit different from other years, and for that I enjoyed it. I think being able to put together the spectacle the way that they did with Morgan Freeman, bringing across sort of... They tried to bring every part of the world into the opening ceremony very actively, and I thought that was really cool. Again, different, so mixed reviews from the rest of the world, but for me, I really enjoyed this one. Probably not as much as I enjoyed South Africa, but again, relatability on that one.
Yeah.
So overall, I'll give it a... strong 7.5 out of 10.
Strong 7.5. Very, you know, the critics on social media, for me, I wouldn't read too much into them because a lot has been made off this World Cup. Even before it kicked off, we saw the campaigns, especially from the Western media, are around certain issues. You know, the controversies, the issues of the deaths of migrant workers, yeah. And then the treatment of LGBT people in Qatar, etc. All those things, you know, there's just been a different number of interests, and of course they would all be tempted to just paint this tournament with a very bad brush.
Let's be honest, Qatar lost in this World Cup long before they even stepped on the field and lost 2-0 to Ecuador. They've been losing and taking L's because of the portrayal of Qatar and this World Cup by the Western media, and it's all been about those very subjects that you're talking about. And I think that in truth this is a football tournament, and I think it needs to be looked at in that almost microcosm. Yes, fine, we don't want to be playing a tournament on the back of dead bodies, but again, those are unverified. So do we want to talk about hyperbole, or do you want to talk about what's happening on the green grass? What's happening now is that Netherlands is playing Senegal in a pristine, immaculate stadium that has a fantastic turnout.
Yeah, it is a fantastic turnout. Anyway, let's talk about the football, Alois, and we saw Qatar well beaten by Ecuador 2-0, and I think 2-0 actually quite flattering to the hosts, because I thought they looked singularly inept, and it almost took the glory out of victory. And Ecuador, they could have really thumped this Qatari side. This Qatari side was poor.
Yeah, Mike, it was really bad. You know, I was very disappointed. You know that Qatar, they knew that this World Cup was coming to them in like 10 years ago or so. I think they could have prepared their team much better.
What could they have done, Alois? Because unlike club football, where you can buy the best.
Yeah, and they tried. I think they did.
In this case, you got to work with what you have.
It is what it is.
I think they didn't do enough with what they have, to be honest. Because a player, you see a fit player when you look at the player. You know, there was no conditioning of those players. Those players were not those players were frail.
Apparently, they've been in camp since June.
And they're doing the wrong things. I suppose.
But is Mark, it an issue of doing the wrong thing? But that was their ceiling.
I'm talking about looking at the player. The player was not conditioned. They were frail. You need to see a player that is fit. You need to see intensity in the player. Those players were
Are we just saying that top class Spanish team that they had, with all that experience, may have missed it somewhere, Barry?
Yes,
they missed it.
Look, that's what Alois is saying. So I disagree slightly. I disagree from the perspective that I don't think they had the quality. I think the quality could have been better. I think they had a few players who had the ability. And you could see that, listen, a key marker is that we didn't see any players pulling up with cramps. So I think they were as fit enough to withstand. But I don't think that they were battle-ready, hardened enough for match preparedness, and this is why. Yes, they were in camp since June, but they were playing friendlies. They were in camp.
These are the Asian champions, Chris. So they do know how to win. They have beaten decent nations before. They're not mugs. Could it be the case of pressure?
Yeah, pressure.
And it's a World Cup opening match.
Yeah.
It's at home. It's a full stadium. We've never been here before.
Massive global audience. And I think no matter who you are, your nerves at that point are going to kick in. If you're any kind of human being under that for the very first time, the pressure and the nerves potentially just got to them. Because I think it's probably one of the easier ways of explaining that kind of a performance.
Yeah, what about South Korea? They were in the same position.
South Korea was helped by I officiated one of the most scandalous World Cups. I never want to hear about the World Cup 2002.
But they were playing good football, Mike. Give it to South Korea. They played. They competed.
And I thought this World Cup, they gave Qatar a bit of a leg up.
Which
that
one?
Opening goal.
That opening goal.
That was offside, guys.
It was in a different phase.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, that was offside. Here's the challenge. You know who confused things? Mm. It's the keeper. The keeper went ahead of the attacker because remember he was attacking the ball.
So there was only one player in defense.
The offside rule is that there must be two defensive players behind the ball.
Charles has got in touch and he says, "Hi, Team ZFM, good show. Just glad that Qatar lost. They are so terrible. Not a football nation. It was always a financial decision rather than a football one. It's hard to retain World Cup, but France can do it again." And that, of course, message has come from Charles. Maybe we should ask the question, do we think the Warriors would have beaten that Qatar side?
I think so.
I think we'd have a shout.
My biggest disappointment, Mike.
We are the same Warriors that occasionally loses to the likes of Malawi and Botswana. It's not like we're covering ourselves in glory. So I think this one, guys, you need to think it through properly.
My biggest disappointment is the technical department in Qatar. Because those guys, they didn't look like they were trying to do anything. You want to see that you're not good enough technically, but you are organized. I would have loved to see a bit more organization. What I saw of the
Qatari team was that I don't think the technical team and the players realized how fast things would be happening on the field of play. You could see that when the game slowed down, they could actually pass it a bit. They could play around. But when it became high intensity and they picked it up.
Jonathan Green says, "I beg to differ. Qatar probably did all they could. Remember, they are the Asian champions." So this is a side that I just think, you know what, like deer in headlights. They just froze on the biggest stage of all. And we've seen it happen, guys, to grander players, bigger players.
Yeah.
France, the world champions in 2002. At that same World Cup that you brought up about South Korea, what happened to them? They lost to Senegal in that opening match. And we're talking about Zinedine Zidane, Marcel Desailly, Lilian Thuram. We're talking about
Thierry Henry at his peak, but going into that game,
you would have said that France will win this 5-0.
Certainly.
5-0. It was not even about who they'll win. It was about they'll thump Senegal.
France didn't freeze.
And for me,
they lost.
And also,
they've lost 2-0 to Ecuador. Is it a bad result?
No, it's not a bad result because that's to slight the ability of that Ecuadori team because Ecuador is the only team, Yagao Mesera, Argentina and Brazil in qualifying.
Style, elegance, determination, passion. Football comes alive in Qatar and on CFM Sport.
Just 10 more seconds left in the first half in the game between the Lions of Teranga and Oranje of Holland. And it's still goalless. And the Senegalese side sweeping forward here. They're looking for a goal. I think he's indulged them a few more seconds as they look, of course, to get the opening goal. Good cross there, but it's cleared. And I think any time now, the ref will probably be blowing for half-time in this game between the Dutch side and a very good Senegalese side, and I do believe it's half time in that game, and it's been end to end action. The Dutch, in fact, it's not yet half time. It looks like he's plucked out a few more seconds from somewhere, and he insists that a free kick for the Dutch side must be taken. Nathan Ake to Virgil van Dijk, back to Ake, and it is half time.
And to the referee.
That's all he wanted.
That's all he wanted. I hate referees like that.
Yeah.
that pass from Ake to Van Dijk.
Yeah, just blow the whistle, man. It's half time. So it is half time, and it's goalless in that game. But there was a game that was played earlier this afternoon, and England hammered Iran 6-2 in an emphatic World Cup opener, thanks to two goals from Arsenal attacker Bukayo Saka and strikes from Borussia Dortmund's Jude Bellingham, and of course the duo of Manchester City Raheem Sterling is no longer in Manchester.
Yeah.
He's at Chelsea. And then, of course, Man City's Jack Grealish and United's Marcus Rashford routed off the route. And you've got to say that, Alois, a pretty impressive start to the tournament by England. Six goals. It's not very often teams score six at a World Cup.
Yeah, it was actually very impressive. And they played good football and they created those goals. You know, they really made their intention felt. And I was also impressed by Harry Kane. I thought that he was going to score a hat-trick in that six, but he actually turned out to be a provider. You know, he actually played the captain's role, and I was impressed with England. You know, we might write them off, but I think they can actually go far in this tournament with the way they play.
Jonathan Green doesn't agree. He says, disappointed in Kane. These are the matches where you build your tally.
Nah.
He's obviously got his eyes on the race for the golden boot.
Golden boot, yeah.
Had Kane been more selfish, the result would have been six.
Exactly.
It wouldn't have been six.
Yeah.
It would probably have been four. So the fact that he turned provider actually gave England more
impetus. Impressed.
So as a player, I think great. As a goal scorer, yeah, you'll be disappointed. But his performance was good.
Chris, this is all about the Black Brigade. And listen, we don't need...
including Grealish.
We don't mean. And Jack Grealish actually is...
he's an honorary.
He's an honorary.
being
of Irish descent. He is. And they do call the Irish the Africans of Europe.
Oh, yeah.
But this was an emphatic, I think, statement by these young black players who we saw ostracized after England failed to win the Euros and were... verbally abused and, of course, abused on social media after they missed penalties. And just to think that the players that were actually the target of a lot of these trolls and guys who are abusing them, Raheem Sterling, Bukayo Saka and Marcus Rashford, all in on the act on the opening day.
Oh, yeah, and it's such a major statement. But here's what's unfortunate about the British, or should I say the English audience.
Mm.
When they are playing extremely well, when they put in performances like this, they're our boys.
Yeah.
When there's a missed opportunity, then they disown them. And I think it can be especially disheartening for these players. And kudos to them for consistently showing up for this English side that sometimes literally just ostracizes them.
And Barry, you've got to say that the English media is fairly consistent in that. Andy Murray, I mean, was all one of theirs. Whenever he lost, he would be a Scot.
the British heavyweight, the great British hope. And then as soon as he lost, he was a Scotsman.
Yeah, he was a Scotsman. And of course, there is that game that is being played, like we said, half-time. It's Senegal and the Netherlands, and it is goalless.
Jude Bellingham.
I wanted to talk about Jude Bellingham. Yeah. He underlined, I think, his status. And a lot of people who have been wondering, why the hype, Barry? Why are people talking about Jude Bellingham? If they watch this game, everything good about England, especially in the first half and in the midfield, was coming through and from Jude Bellingham.
What a player. And let me tell you, the heir apparent to Kevin De Bruyne, for me, is Jude Bellingham. He is phenomenal. He's got the size, stature, athleticism. He's young. He's still a teenager.
I just the pressure.
I don't think he's got the range of
Kevin De Bruyne.
Wait, Mike, wait. Think about Jude Bellingham, still a lighty at Birmingham, and then his move to Borussia Dortmund, and then now how he's matured into the player that we're seeing now.
I think the trajectory is bang on.
But I think KDB is a generational player.
I think Jude Bellingham
is. Do you know who KDB for me is?
Yeah.
He's Gerrard.
The new Gerrard.
You can't, because I don't remember anyone. Do you know why?
Yeah.
It's not about how KDB just operates in the small pockets of spaces.
Sure.
But also that long pass.
The long pass.
It's the cross.
Yeah.
It's the goal.
It's the goal,
And that ability. I don't see that in Jude Bellingham yet. I don't see Jude Bellingham delivering a cross from the halfway line or making that 40-yard diagonal. Uh-huh. He still doesn't have that in his armory. I'm not saying he's not going to get there, but I just don't think he's that type of player.
So here's my deal.
He's not that dynamic.
look, my deal is that
I think the he's a Scholes type of player.
I think he's a level higher.
Really?
Yeah, he's a level higher.
No, guys.
He's a level higher than Scholes.
He's a
level higher than Scholes.
You know what? PRO.
No. Scholes was more of a grafter and a destroyer.
Scholes couldn't tackle to save his life. Yeah. But my goodness, the ginger ninja when you gave him the ball.
Scholesy was fantastic. And I'm not diminishing the quality of Scholes.
Iowa. Guys.
he was fantastic.
How quickly we forget.
We haven't forgotten Michael.
I'm a Liverpool fan, guys.
Scholes was something special. But I'm just saying that what I've seen of Jude Bellingham, both at Dortmund and in England colours now, this boy is on a path to become one of the great ones. Mark my words.
I agree with Benny.
Mark my words. Scholes. He's on the right track. Scholes. As long as he's not affected by outside of football influences.
Guys.
Jude Bellingham is on track.
He's on track.
His next decision about clubs is going to be very important.
Oh, shucks. I mean, I'm just. Anyway, let's take a look. There's a game to be played tonight. It's between Wales. And, of course, that game is between Wales and the United States of America.
As the stars shoot across the desert sky, the lions roar and the eagles swoop. Africa, we hunt as one.
We're not saying he was not good. He was great.
Particularly outside the box. In an attacking corner.
I don't even think Bellingham. Yeah. You should be comparing him to any of those guys at the moment.
No, we're talking about a youngster who we can see in 5 years' time where he can be. He's not there yet. Guys. We're not saying he's better than Scholes as he is now.
We're looking at the trajectory, where is he going to be in five years' time?
He's a teenager, and we're looking at what about the 25.
And you guys are now sounding like the English press. Judy is nowhere near Scholes. I agree.
Where was Scholes at 18?
It doesn't follow, guys. Joe Cole was one of the most magnificent youngsters I've ever seen.
Fair enough. Jack Wilshere at 18.
Yeah. When he was 18, we were all saying to you, know what? Here's the next Paul Gascoigne.
We always do that. So that's what we're doing now.
And then decisions.
If it doesn't happen, then tough luck.
I think it's decisions. Because Jack Wilshere's career path took a
It's one thing to be a two-time champion, yes.
Yeah.
But to reach five... Guys, there is no telling what happens.
Yeah.
Yes, you've got the potential, but you've got to earn it for you to start saying, here's the next. Because, guys, Scholes was a marvel.
But like, I think what's key here, like Barry said, is the decision making. I think a lot of what we see in terms of how a player then turns out, it's these next sort of 4 or 5 years that are critical for him, and a wrong move can derail absolutely all of that.
Our friend in Poland says, Ndakambonzi, the next genius Chidzikwe, and the pressure, ma one.
Well, Jude Bellingham is hardly listening to ZFM Sport at this stage.
No. But
we can't be the only people talking about this.
Every newspaper tomorrow in England
is going to be talking about Jude.
Likely talking about Jude Bellingham.
And it just happens when you do well. You can't escape that.
My belief is the strength of character of that kid. The what he's already demonstrated. Remember, this is a guy. He left Birmingham. What? 16 was he?
Yeah.
I think he was 16.
Yeah.
To go to Germany. New country, everything. And he's been able to withstand the pressure of working in that environment.
The pressure is inevitable. If you're good, you're good. The pressure is inevitable. Michael Owen was in worse pressure.
Like
he went on to excel.
Okay, Scholes.
We said he can go on to be better.
He's making it worse, okay?
We are not saying he's better now, but he has the potential to go on and be better.
When we talk about English midfielders, I think Tegati, Gerrard, Gascoigne, and Scholes. That's the Mount Rushmore.
Would you say a Lamps?
Lamps was for me a goal scorer. I don't put him in that class.
A goal scoring midfielder.
Yeah, I don't put him in that class.
Yeah, Chelsea fans
love to put him in that conversation.
He's not.
He was nowhere near the ability on the ball. He was a phenomenal goal scorer.
And work rate and so forth.
Very busy player. Scored. But when it came to just, you know, the ability on the ball. Yeah. Guys.
Can I add one more name to that Mount Rushmore? What is it? Gascoigne.
Gerrard. Scholes.
Bellingham.
Yes.
And on that bombshell, we'll end. We'll catch you tomorrow. May God richly bless you. That's my story. And I'm sticking to it. But Andy. Out.
And it's Messi. It is the cleanest of clean finishes and the best on the planet.
The biggest sports stories.
Chelsea, UEFA Champions League winners of 2021.
The biggest interviews.
That such a great spectacle is ruined by such thuggish behaviour.
And all the analysis right here.
He's the one player that has the arrogance to think that he can play in any stadium in the world, on any pitch in the world, in front of any player in the world, and take them on.
Every weekday, it's my sport, it's your sport. It's ZFM Sport on ZFM Stereo. My station, your station.
Hi, this is Mike Muddleton. You can catch me and the team for all the latest breaking news out of the world of sport, local as well as international, on your favorite station, my station, your station, ZFM. We are the team on ZFM Sport.
ZFM.